Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us this morning. Those of us who are in the hall, following CDC guidelines, and so we are fully masked. And for most of us this morning who online, and again, a warm invitation to those members who live in the Tampa Bay area to please join us on Sunday morning. It is a safe environment. And we hope soon to open Sundays again to non-members. So in Bill's doing the verse that preceded this talk, he mentioned the word Sangha a lot. Going as a river. May we all have a mind of peace together. May we liberate ourselves from all the complexes of self together. That was an invocation, not just to the individual, but for the whole community. And so what I want to talk this morning about is community, because starting, I guess, today, that will be available, a document called the Sangha Harmony Guide will be available. It'll be on the website, so it'll be specifically available to members, but also anybody can access it. And I want to talk about the Sangha Harmony Guide. And even though it was developed in relationship to the Sangha of the Florida Community of Mindfulness, I think the idea of Sangha as community in a generic sense is very powerful, because we may understand kind of the specialness of our spiritual community and the way we cultivate relationships in our spiritual community and how we deal with conflicts or misunderstandings within our spiritual community. But if we stop there, it is not very beneficial. Because, community just means relationships, right? Sangha is a certain kind of relationships, but we're all in relationships. We have family relationships, we have friendship relationships, we have work relationships, we have community relationships, in the broader community, social relationships. And so I think what we're learning as we learn how to create harmony in a Sangha, hopefully the principles will be taken into all areas, and we'll see all these kinds of groupings that we're involved in as Sanghas. Can be a Sangha of two, or three, or five, or seven, or 10. But the only way we're going to change the world is if we take these teachings on how to build community, how to build Sangha, how to live in harmony with our fellow beings. If we don't take it into all the areas of our life, then its effects will be fairly prescribed and minimal. So please, as you listen to this, we're talking about a guide that was specifically developed for our community, please see it in this wider context. So the Sangha Harmony Guide, and in a minute we'll be presenting it, was something that was developed by a small group of members, most of which were board members, and it came out of some sort of legal promptings by our insurers. But more importantly, it came out of a kind of societal, right? We know that not just in the secular world have people misuse power to do harm, But unfortunately, in the religious spiritual world, even in the Buddhist world, there has been a misuse and abuse of power relationships often. You know, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. So it was very in line with this. We realized that we have been very fortunate in our community, in our almost 25 years of existence as a community, that we've really never had these kinds of issues. But it doesn't, you know, doesn't mean that we won't. Or so there needs to be a process that if these malfeasances occur, people can rectify them at various levels. And so we needed sort of a guide for that. But I am very happy to say that rather than just developing sort of a protocol for grievances, if one feels one has been taken advantage of, harassed, manipulated, or other kinds of malfeasance, within the community, that the emphasis is primarily on Sangha harmony rather than Sangha disharmony. Because I think that is key. In the same way, if our bodies are healthy, if we have good, healthy bodies, you know, we take good care of it, and they are strong and they are healthy, there's a good chance we will not be getting sick, right? But if we don't, if we have an unhealthy body, there's a greater chance that illness can find a good host. So I think by calling it a Sangha harmony guide rather than a Sangha disharmony guide, I think really speaks to what we're trying to do here and where we want to primarily put our emphasis. That if we create the framework and the structure for Sangha harmony, which means the relations among people, then the chance that disease will occur within the Sangha, it's not totally preventable, obviously, because we are just human beings. And you know, human beings get up to all kinds of things, but it will be hopefully minimized. And so I want to share with you this Sangha Harmony Guide, which again, I think will be beneficial to members and non-members. And I want to thank the people, the small group that was involved with this, Angie and John McCarris, Carol Meyer, Mike Pettit, Tammy Klein. Is there anybody I forgot? I think that was the group, and then they brought me in for collaboration. And again, these kinds of guidelines are very common these days, right? Not only in the business world and the nonprofit world, but in churches and everything, because human beings, being what they are, they really get up to mischief, don't they? And because of their lack of development and the lack of ethics, oftentimes people, when they get into positions of power, misuse it. So first, there's an introduction. Let me just say, look with the Sangha, walk with the Sangha feet, feel with the Sangha heart is a calligraphy that Thich Nhat Hanh, this is an original that I got in Plum Village years ago. It speaks to, what does it speak to? That the practice of non-self, the practice of moving away from self-centeredness, egocentricity, the practice of opening to the world means that as we move through the world, we don't just move through as an individual. But we also move through with an awareness of interdependence, interrelationship, interbeing, which I think is so essential for our world and also for our own development, to come out of the prison of a highly individualized selfhood that's only concerned about itself. So the idea that We're looking with the Sangha eye, working, walking with the Sangha feet, feeling with the Sangha heart, is an acknowledgement of our relationship. And again, whether it's the Sangha as our community, whether it's a Sangha in a family, whether it's a Sangha in a relationship of any kind, to see that one participates in something bigger than oneself, and the health and the harmony of all these relationships are dependent on my awareness that I am part of something bigger than myself. And my actions of body, speech, and mind are not just done for me, but they're done for the well-being of others. So this is a very fundamental shift. And you know, the great gift of having a spiritual community that's doing its best to live this way is this is a place where we can practice, where we can develop those skills, where we can learn those teachings. And hopefully then, you know, as we enter all these other arenas of relationships we have, you know, we can practice them. Yeah, so next, you know, that quote by Thay? Oh, I forgot, Ray Lynn, you know, the next in the introduction. So it begins with a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh. And as you, many of you know, he's a strong influence of mine and our community as a teacher and a guide. And he has put great emphasis on Sangha, on community. And so he sets a very high bar. Sangha is a community of friends practicing the Dharma together to bring about and maintain awareness. This essence of a Sangha is awareness, understanding, acceptance, harmony, and love. I could give a whole Dharma talk just on those words. Awareness. We're aware of what's going on around us. We're aware of what's going on within us. We're aware of what's healthy and what's not healthy. We're aware of what supports well-being and what is toxic. We're aware, Florida Community of Mindfulness, we're aware. And we bring understanding. Understanding means we understand why things develop, why people are the way they are, causes and conditions. We are understanding. We're accepting. We accept the world, we accept ourselves, we accept each other as we are. Even though we're in a process of transformation, we are all where we are right now. And then we are cultivating harmony. Harmony means what? We live in harmony with what is. We don't stand outside going, no, I will not live in harmony with this. Harmony doesn't mean that you approve of it. People get, ooh, I don't want to approve of that. But harmony means I don't feel separate from it. I am present to it. I am aware of it. I don't separate from it. I move into it, and if there's something that can be done to transform or heal, I do that. To be in harmony is very important, and of course, love. So when you see, he says, when you see these qualities in a Sangha, you know this is a true Sangha. But if you don't, you have the courage to say so. I think this is very important. And again, this is sort of what our Sangha Harmony Guide gets at, as you see as we go into it. It provides a safe mechanism that we can deal with, you know, the very human, as all of us know, there will be in life misunderstandings, different points of view. There may be conflicts arise around these things, right? And they can get more and more significant. One thinks this is injustice, or you know. But how do we rather than being ambushed, right, by expecting these things aren't going to happen, right? To live in a world where we understand the nature of human beings, the nature of ego, the nature of self, the nature that in our community, let's say, you know, we don't give everybody a psychological battery of tests to gain membership, right? Many of us, before we entered our families of origin, we didn't do psychological assessments of all of them to decide, is this really the kind of people I want to be raised with, right? and many of our relationships and work relationships, you know, it's not like a very thorough assessment has been done beforehand. So we enter the world of relationships of all kinds, and there are many things there that we may discover over time or within ourselves that just are. And the question is, how can we be in harmony with that, but also be part of change and transformation? So again, by putting this in the introduction sets a high bar, right, for our community, that we are committed not just to call ourselves the Florida Community of Mindfulness, that not just to do lip service, but that we actually are committed to live this way with each other. And especially, and those of you who have been in relationship, and I'm sure everybody here has been in relationship, it's easy to be in relationship when everything's going your way, right? It's easy to be in relationship when everybody's happy and blah, 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 right? But the test of any relationship is when there's disharmony, when there's conflict, when there's disagreement, when there's conflict, right? You know, how do you deal with that? And since I would imagine, is there anybody here who's been in relationships from early childhood until now of all types and says, what's he talking about? It's always been good and harmonious and everybody's always on the same page and treats each other with great kindness and understanding. Is anybody here say has been my experience in all my relationships? I'd like to meet you. Yeah. So rather than pretending or hoping that those aspects of what it means to be a human being, including within ourselves, are not here, the Sangha Harmony Guide accepts that that's where we begin. And then it goes down, and again, this comes to a process probably we did maybe 10 years ago when we went through a process within our community to develop core values, to look at what our core values were, our mission, vision. Those who've been part of organizations know about these things, mission statements and value statements, goals and objectives and all that. Again, I've given talks on this. I think they're probably on our website, so I won't go into it. So the core values are the essential principles that underlie, motivate, and shape us, guide us in realizing our mission and vision. So, we can just a little further down to the bottom of that page where it starts awakening. Yeah, so these, and again, I invite you, they're all on our website. Maybe, I think actually everybody to become a member, you may remember, have to check off that you've read them and you agree with them. They're hard to disagree with, but I want to talk about that now because again, it would have been so much easier to go into a grievance procedure. You know, this is the grievance procedure. But I think the more important thing is we begin with how to have healthy relationships. And healthy relationships, especially in a spiritual community, begin with, how can I make myself as healthy a human being as I can be, so I can contribute to the health and well-being of the whole. So again, the first thing which really puts us kind of very clearly, in the mainstream of the Buddhist tradition is our fundamental emphasis on awakening. We want to awaken from our suffering. We want to awaken from our delusions, our misperceptions. We want to wake up, right? We want to heal. We want to transform so we can really become what the Buddha said we are, which is we are awakened beings. We have the full potential of all the good, wholesome qualities already within our mind. How do we awake to them and how do we cultivate them? So that's essential to our community. I won't go into it, but for many of we are in the mainstream of the Mahayana, Plum Village, and other, but it's non-denominational. We are not part of one Buddhist sect. a one Buddhist tradition. To me, the Buddhist tradition is a rich tradition that has much experimentation in many different ways for 2,600 years. And we want to be able to pull on the full breadth of that wisdom and experience as we develop ourselves. Community, well, that's what we're talking about. We are a community. Inclusive, obviously, it begins with the Buddha. The Buddha said, all beings are Buddhas. All beings have the essential same nature. So therefore, any kind of discrimination, et cetera, would be totally antithetical to the Buddhist way of looking at things, which is all embracing, sees the commonality of all beings. So we're inclusive. We practice mindful living, which is very much part of this text, which is meaning our practice is engaged with the reality of the world. This is not this is not simply philosophy or theology or metaphysics. We practice a Buddhism that is present to the reality of the situation, personal situation, societal, what's going on in society. We want it to be relevant. We want to be mindful of what's going on within us and around us so we can respond intelligently and wisely and compassionately to ourselves and everyone else. Service, as you know, we put a great emphasis because learning to give freely of one's talents and abilities and resources, to share that with other people, to share that with, like in our case, a community, an organization that you feel is doing good in the world, to let go of, which is very hard for us. we are so attached to our individuality and my time and my resources and, to let go of that and to just say, how can I be of help? How can I be of service? Where can I, we are very protective. We are very, it's deep within our culture, unfortunately. The sense of privacy and individuality and I, me, my, and, again, other cultures traditionally have much more communal sense of the we, of the wholesomeness of the we, of wanting to contribute to the we, to benefit the we, right? To acknowledge we're all in this together. So service is one way to break out of our aloneness. Deep sharing, deep listening, which is very much, again, I think related to this whole thing of conflict resolution, which is and very significant in our community. We are committed to listening deeply with each other, right? We are committed to learning to go under the surface and to want to understand our fellow human beings. That's our commitment. We don't want to just live superficially or judgmentally, endlessly labeling people and judging people and making demands on people. The first thing we should do is listen to them. Who are you? What's going on with you? Why? You're doing this and that. Tell me why. I want to learn about you. See, it's a curiosity. So this deep listening and this deep sharing, which is this willingness to be authentically me and to let people know who I am. I mean, many of us, are in situations in life, work situations, relationships, where we don't feel safe to share deeply, to be open about who we are and what we're really feeling and what's really going on with us and what our past really is, right? So that whole aspect of deep listening, deep sharing, I think is very important. And it's a wonderful skill. So it's something we practice within our community. And hopefully we'll learn to practice that in all our other relationships. But again, to do that, you need a what? A container where you feel safe to do that, right? And so the container of a community where people feel safe, right, is very essential. And then the final one, of course, is direct transmission, which means, you know, the real practice of Buddhism is living. And the way the tradition has been maintained with authenticity for 2,600 years is the authentic transmission from teacher to student going back to the Buddha. You know, it's basically, you know, if one wants to learn about Buddhism, one can, what? One can get a degree in Buddhism, one can get into religious studies, one can read books, one can do all kinds of things. But how to practice Buddhism, how to live Buddhism, this is something that's transmitted directly, because this is personal. Human beings are personal. So, and then it goes on to say that all this being said, you know, disharmony may arise. How can we protect our community? How can we protect the people of the community so they feel safe and they feel able to deal with whatever arises? So the first thing, which I think is so essential, is the five mindfulness trainings, which I think many of you are aware of. You know, these guidelines for behavior, they're very simple. But within a community, within a family, within relationships, and wouldn't it be wonderful within societies, within the world, if there was some shared fundamental value system that everybody kind of ascribed to, that was sort of not religious in the religious sense, but really just had to do with, you know, right living. Right living in Buddhism means, quite simply, doing no harm, doing the least harm. So in a certain sense, these five mindfulness trainings, anyone, Buddhist, non-Buddhist, anti-Buddhist, could subscribe to. If we don't share, in a very general sense, a common value system, then it's really hard to discuss things with each other. As you might have, if you've been attending to what's been going on in our country politically and socially these last decade or so, you can see that, you know, when people have lost that fabric of values that hold them together, that are common, right? And then, you know, sort of everybody's on their own and everybody can make it up to their own. And if you have people who live in very different realities with very different ideas and very different values and different, you know, and meaning of it, well, no wonder there's endless conflict that does not get resolved. How can it get resolved? There's no commonality of understanding. There's no platform where people can come together to go, oh, is this... Oh, yeah, let's begin. Like, number one, reverence for life, right? Reverence for life. You know, we want to support life. We don't want to do harm, physical harm, right? Emotional harm. To each other. I don't want to do it to you. I don't want you to do it to me. You know, to other people, to the planet, to animals, to nature, you know, whatever you want to do. Yeah, life is sacred. I mean, it's so simple. You know, if I said to anybody here, everybody here, is it okay if somebody else takes your life? Right? We go, oh yeah, you want to take my life? Go ahead. Oh, you want to do me harm? Yeah, harm me. That's fine, physically, emotionally. Oh yeah, you want to do harm, hurt, you know, my children or my loved ones? Yeah, that's fine. No, right? We all say what? No. No, I don't want anybody to do harm to me, especially to take my life. Right? So all beings are like that. So in acknowledgement of that, we make the vow or the commitment to do, if not no harm, the least harm in our actions of body, speech, and mind. True happiness, the second one. You know, I understand, you know, that true happiness is different than temporary happiness. There are many happinesses that we get from pleasure, from good times, from having fun, from things working out. You know, there's all kinds of temporary happiness. But what is true happiness? How do I experience true happiness? How do I nurture true happiness in others? So this is a very, you know, again, I could, there probably are Dharma talks that I've given them many on the five mindfulness trainings. But a lot of it is this crazy idea of altruism and generosity. You know, this crazy idea that somehow when I am doing for others, helping others, serving others, supporting happiness and well-being in others, that makes me happy. When I'm thinking only of myself and my own happiness and my own needs and my own wants, and I'm acting in the world just around that, the interesting thing is I'm not happy. I may be temporarily happy, but I don't feel that kind of inner happiness that one gets when one's turned it around. True love. And this a lot has to do with, you know, especially the, as you'll see, and I'll let, you know, again, this will all be on the website. And true love is really a response to what traditionally in Buddhism is called sexual misconduct. And we know, I mean, whether it's in religious or society, you know, the amount of sexual misconduct that goes on in our society is quite pervasive, unfortunately. People using this very basic human need, activity, whatever you want to call it, that is fundamentally at its best, it's quite simply a pleasurable experience, becomes something else because it's misused and abused. So learning to not confuse our need for love with sexuality is very important, because many people act out thinking that if they can fulfill themselves sexually, even by even manipulating and forcing another, they'll somehow resolve this deep feeling of separation and loneliness within themselves. And again, you'll see that this, you know, very much speaks to, you know, abuse. You know, abuse. The fourth training is loving speech and deep listening. I talked about that earlier. And the fifth training is nourishment and healing, really aware of conversation, the way we consume. You know, and we're doing an intensive right now on the four nutriments. Buddhism has so many fours and fives, you know. So, Thich Nhat Hanh, when he wrote his book about the five mindfulness training, called it For a Future to Be Possible. He was talking about the planet. He was, and I would certainly say this kind of ethical framework, and I you know, invite you to please look on the site, is essential for a harmonious community. It protects the community. It makes it a community of integrity. And it deals with all the different ways that misconduct can arise if one is not living according to right action. And right action means is an action that that contributes to wholesomeness. Wholesomeness within me, wholesomeness within the person that I'm relating to, wholesomeness within the community. It gives us a framework to look at our actions of body, speech, and mind, right? And it gives a common framework for our community. In the same way, I certainly would encourage us to look at our other relationships, our families, and other kinds of friendships, and ask ourselves, is there an understood kind of fundamental basis in these relationships where we agree on what right conduct is, what right action is, what right speech is, right? If there isn't, there's going to be problems. They can be big problems. And we then treat the problem out here by trying to resolve it out here rather than looking, well, maybe the problem is we've never had that discussion within the context of relationship, between the context of interaction. You know, what is the fundamental value system that we want to, you know, relate to each other? What is the container? Is there, you know, there's some saying oftentimes, again, you know, with, it's like, you know, you go to the doctor and all they do is what? They treat your symptoms. But they don't often ask about the life of the person, the actions of their body, speech, and mind that may be the cause really of the symptoms, or why they keep coming back again and again. So sometimes we get into conflicts in relationships and misunderstandings, and we try to work it out sort of on a conflict resolution thing, which is helpful, but never go, well, maybe it's a deeper issue. Maybe the conflict is arising because we don't agree on how to be in relationship. What's important? Have we both agreed that we're really going to be careful of our speech? We know what right speech is, which means we know what wrong speech is. We know what appropriate sexuality and the misuse of sexuality is, right? So these things, I would say, are very, they're not just, we don't want to trivialize it by saying, oh, these are moral principles. I mean, I think, again, when Thich Nhat Hanh called his book For a Future to Be Possible, he was talking about the world. And was saying, if this world is going to have a future, there's got to be some common agreement across culture and societies and political views and, are we committed to doing the least harm? Are we committed to alleviating the suffering of beings? Is that our fundamental purpose? So, in the course of human events, conflict arises. There can always be misunderstandings. There could always be difference of views. Is that true? Yeah, that's true. And so when those manifest, they might manifest as just simply thoughts or feelings, but they may manifest that we feel in conflict with another human being. We may feel in conflict with our sangha. We may feel in conflict with our teacher. I mean, there are all kinds of things, that arise. You know, we get triggered. We have negative thoughts and feelings. And, oftentimes in the face of that, we what? Oftentimes we stuff it. Oftentimes we gossip and talk to everybody else about it, about this person or about this situation, right? Oftentimes we walk away. But learning how to do none of that, which none of those resolve anything in a deeper sense. You know, learning how to normalize conflict and to turn the resolution of conflict, utilizing the tools we have, as part of our practice. There will always be misunderstandings as long as we live in a world where most people are not very enlightened. I'm being kind here. You know, there's always going to be conflicts. There are always going to be, you know, and I think as people who want to transform ourselves and transform the world, you know, rather than, you know, all kinds of dysfunctional ways or not useful ways of how we often deal with conflict. Of course, the other thing, you know, is we act out, we get angry, we say things, we do, you know, again, which only perpetuates. You know, we want to, what? We want to learn how to resolve conflicts. And where we begin in this process, in this document, is the first step is not to file a grievance. Okay, we are a community. Right? So, you know, in your families, if it's a misunderstanding, you know, you each don't get lawyers right away, right? Sure, your kids would probably like that, but we don't do that, do we? We want to resolve things. And so the first step, I'm here now on step one. So this is informal. You'll see later on, there is a formal procedure if this isn't working. And this is an amazingly first step. The first thing we do is what? Self-reflection. What? I have to reflect on myself and my contribution and what this is triggering me and maybe why it's triggering and maybe how I participated in creating the situation or maybe what I'm holding on to something or you know what I'm saying? Ooh. No, I you know what I really like? I like to blame the other person, right? Is that true? Yeah, we like to blame the other person and make it all about them. Yeah, I got to get them to reflect. I got to get them to do some self-reflection so they can see how right I am and how wrong they are, okay? Not the way. So the first thing we do is self-reflection. We look at our own internal dialogue. We look at our own internal stories. You know, we look at how we're responding to our own emotionality. We're willing to look at our own history and go, hmm. You know, a lot of times when people come to me with these kinds of things, I say, is there anything familiar about this? You ever been here before in relationships, you know, or kind of having the same reaction, same response, same time of thought, same type of feelings. You know, it's like, maybe there's something here with you that's making this situation or this interaction with this person so difficult. Okay? So this is a very important first step in all situations. And this is, you know, this is our dharma, this is our mindfulness, this is our, you know, bringing in this meditative awareness piece to our life that oftentimes people just don't have, right? They just react. They just act out. And they act out and react in historical ways, whether it's acting out against somebody, withdrawing within, you know, all the things we do, you know. So we want to break out of that pattern by using this aversive situation, quote unquote, that's obviously aversive for us, as a means of awakening, as a means of being free. And we can't do that if we're not capable of self-reflection. Again, sometimes many of us may find, especially in more charged areas of life, self-reflection not easy. So that's why it's good to have a friend, a Dharma buddy, somebody maybe who could help us in our process of self-reflection. Okay. You can maybe see your teacher. So we have, you know, in our community, we have a teacher, we have members who've been around for many years, developed in their practice, as well as we have what we call a Sangha Harmony Committee, The Sangharma Committee is really our elders council. So this is a group of six members who've been with the community many years, have functioned in many different ways. And so we've created this elders council as sort of being an advisory board for the community and the board. But then when we looked at, this document, which calls for the creation of a Sangha Harmony Committee, my thought was, well, we already have that. We have a group of people that have stability and experience and wisdom, and they can be a refuge for members. So these people, and again, they're all on the website, are listed, can also be a resource to us. The next is beginning a new ceremony. I'm not going to go into it, but I want to give a strong plug for it. I've given workshops and teachings. I think I'm giving one when? In September. I certainly encourage. there are many jewels that Thich Nhat Hanh has brought this world, this very simple ceremony, that's not very ceremonial, of beginning anew, I think is a stroke of genius. And we want to use that in our community. I always advise couples, families, if you can incorporate this in your relationships. When I used to be a professional, I even used it sometimes without calling it beginning anew with when I was brought in to consult with boards that were in conflict. It's a wonderful means. Again, I could talk about it, but I won't today. So I encourage you. It is online, and the process is all here, right? The beginning anew. There's an appendix that actually talks about how to do it. And again, I'll be giving a workshop in September on beginning anew. So this is our, I would say, at the level of misunderstanding, conflict, beginning anew is really our primary way. It's a way that we can be with conflict. We can be with the individual that we're in conflict with. Sometimes they don't know it, right? And reconcile. Reconcile is the key piece. But also there can be mediation, and that's where, again, coming upon somebody from the Sangha Harmony, from the Elders Council, Sangha Harmony Committee, to kind of come in and as a third party to help mediate a misunderstanding, a conflict between us and another Sangha member is also helpful. Those of you who've been parents might find that you've been called upon to mediate between your children, or you might find yourself in your extended family often being called upon to kind of mediate when people can't seem to be able to do it themselves. So again, we want to make use of that process. Now, and I'm sort of going through quickly, because again, you'll have the document as well as I want to answer questions. There is a formal grievance procedure. When I was looking at this again this morning, I never liked the word grievance. Because again, I think we have a lot of references for, grievance procedures at work or whatever. And we're a community, we're a family. It's a little harsh and legalistic. But when I went to the dictionary and I heard the definition, I said, yeah, it's pretty good. So we're sort of stuck, unless something comes up with another one, of the word grievance. But a real or imaginary wrong causing resentment and regarded as grounds for complaint. Now, this is important to understand, especially the people who are acting in a way to resolve the grievances. Some grievances are very grounded in reality, right? They're very legitimate. Some grievances aren't. I mean, there are people who, I've experienced it, just in mental health, but even in our community over these last 20 years, There have been a few instances where people have had manic episodes, where they've sort of become delusional and think all kinds of things that have no basis in reality, that they believe are true. As well as people can get stuck. People can get stuck in being aggrieved, stuck in thinking their perception of reality is correct, and, you know, get on the bandwagon. You know, and there have been things which can be very destructive to a family, to a community. So it's very important that we channel when people have grievances into the process, right? The opposite of that is loose cannons and gossip. And to me, this is, I don't like gossip. What is gossip? It means I talk to you about her. I come to you about him. You know, when people do that to me, I say, have you talked to them? Why are you telling me this? Talk to them. You know, bring this to them. Let them know how you feel. Well, I can't do that. Well, then go through the, you know, go through the beginning new process. Find a senior person to mediate it, right? I mean, right? Because when we gossip about other people, which means we're talking negatively about a person, we're spreading what? Poison. Because it has no benefit. Now, if I go to you because I have a question, what should I do? And so I'm seeking counsel, right? That's different than just telling, you know what I'm saying? And again, this kind of gossip, this kind of negative talk is, again, pervasive in our culture, right? And we may participate in it. And I would say we need to really be careful about our words and the effects of our words. Why am I telling this person this? It's an interesting question to ask myself. You know, why am I bringing this to this person? You know, if I'm bringing it to them because I want help in resolving it, well, that's one thing. But if I'm bringing it just because I want to get, you know, I want to get more people on my side, you know, right? To get them to see the way I see about this person or situation. Again, to me, that's, again, and I'm not, this is very subtle. I'm not talking about that we don't encourage the resolution of these things. I think in a healthy community, we encourage the resolution, but there's got to be a healthy framework, you see. And it's also going to be a healthy framework for the person, because a lot of times people get stuck in their own negativity, in their own endlessly repeated story of complaint that has no resolution. So it's just like a poison within the person, right? So we want to find a way that the person doesn't get poisoned, the community doesn't get poisoned, and yet it's resolved, right? So a grievance is a real or imaginary wrong causing resentment regarded as grounds for complaint, a feeling of resentment or injustice as having been unfairly treated. So when one really feels that, and the other means we talked about have not felt satisfying, or else the grievance is of higher order, right? Such as what? Such as the teacher using their power to act out, manipulate people, sexually use people, embezzlement, you know what I mean? Something that higher order, you know, some things, as you'll see in the procedure, go right to the grievance, or would be brought right to the board. And there is a process of, you know, with the Sangha Harmony Committee, that at that point they actually, you know, do a fact-finding kind of situation, as you'll see, and there are time frames and reports, and so, you know, people's... but again, I want to come back to where we began. If we are truly living our values, if we are truly practicing at the very immediate level, conflict resolution, beginning anew, mediation, most things, you know, the Sangha Harmony Committee should not be very busy. Right? If they're very busy, to me, it shows the community is not healthy, is it? So let me, again, because it's all on the website, I really just wanted to this morning kind of introduce it to you and let you know that it's there for you. But as I said, I think it's a wonderful document because most of it is about how do we create very consciously harmony in Sangha relations. I think it's a good model. You know, as we know, one of our ways, many, many people would like to create another, to create a better world, right? And many people have different ways of going about it, right? But our way, and this comes from, you know, long history of Buddhism, and Thich Nhat Hanh is, you know, we live in society, we have political views, we still have a democracy, you know, so acting in those ways can be beneficial. But if we want a different world, then we have to be willing to be a different kind of person. As Thich Nhat Hanh says, we want a peaceful world, peace begins with me. I want a nonviolent world, then I have to become a nonviolent person. I want a world that is free of anger and violence, then I have to liberate myself from that. I want a world where everyone is respected and valued, then I need to, live that way, right? And so community, Florida Community Mindfulness, is one little tiny way that we contribute to the transformation of the world because we live it. We practice it. It's a practice. And we begin to take it into these other areas of our life and relationships with our life, right? So we're sort of creating the context of a transformed world in a very real way right now. We don't have to wait. Okay. So let me open the floor. Oh, Angie, yes, I'm sorry. So let me just repeat this. So Angie's reminding me, and she did actually write it out for me. Thank God she's here to keep me on track. So on our website, and again, we'll probably maybe put this in Mindfulness Matters this week, on the website section called Community, you just go to floridamindfulness.org/sanghaharmony, and you will find the guide. And members of the Sangha Harmony Committee. And you'll find this talk. Very efficient, thank you. So, questions about what's been shared this morning? Anybody in the hall, you just raise your hand and we'll give you the mic. Anybody online, just... Ray Lynn is up there, right? Anything not clear? Anything you wonder about? Anything you think is missing? Again, I want to express my appreciation to the people on the Sangha Harmony Committee. It was a process. It took, what, a year? 2 years, you know? Started. You should have seen the document in the beginning. It was quite big. But over time, we kind of pared it down to the essential and made it, there's lots of, we also checked with other communities and saw what they were doing and got their documents. And a lot of it I felt was very cold and very legalistic. And the emphasis was on the grievance process. And I was very happy that we were able to create a document that really focuses primarily on how you create harmony and well-being within the community and how to deal with challenges and conflicts and misunderstandings. And then if all that breaks down, right, then there's this formal procedure for resolution. So again, any questions? Yes, Raylan.
restate how to get to it from the website.
Yeah, so we will put this in Mindfulness Matters, but basically in the website, there are various sections. There's one section called Community. And in the Community section, there's a...
You actually see the page in Community, but if you want to forego all that, just type in floridamindfulness.org/summer.
So Angie says, if you go to the Community section on the website, you will see as a subheading, Sangha Harmony. But if you don't want to have to go through those steps, you can just go floridamindfulness.org/Sangha Harmony, one word, and go directly to it. Yes.
See, what are your thoughts on dating in the Sangha? There is a lot of potential for disharmony and people leaving the Sangha if things do not work out.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, there it is. Actually, there is, there are pieces in this which talks about relationships within the Sangha, okay? Again, it's primarily, with those why the ethics and true love and all that. I mean, so these are the guidelines. I think in the procedure, it was primarily about power relationships. So it was like a teacher student or senior student and junior student, or somebody, you know, mentor and mentoree. So relationships where there are power differentials. Again, it didn't forbid it. You know, we're not here to forbid, but it certainly made the emphasis was on. Please be aware of them. You know, as to, I think, this other issue, which is more horizontal, just kind of, what would it be, you know, Sangha people getting into relationship with each other as peers? I mean, that seems to be what the question's about, right? Yeah, I mean, yeah. Yep. I mean, you know, there's just no getting around it, right? I mean, this is not unknown. And I think it's something to be aware of. It's just like, you know, people get in relationships at work, right? And they don't work out, and all of a sudden, you know, you still have to work with the person, right? Yeah, I think there should be a caution. And hopefully, what can I mean, yeah, there's no way around this. Yeah, so it's there to do that with a person in the Sangha, you know, has the potential for creating a problematic situation. You know, one would hope, in the best of all possible worlds, that if the relationship didn't work out, there would still be reconciliation, understanding, and acceptance, and it's not like, you know, one of the people has to leave. And to be honest with you, I'm aware of a couple of those situations have arisen. You know, I feel bad because people are coming here to heal and transform and for the benefit of the community, and I feel bad that they've lost that. But again, I think it's because there is something about how the relationship ended that has obviously created very harsh feelings that the person feels cannot be reconciled. I would hope they could be reconciled with love and understanding. But I understand, and I think it behooves us to understand that. Yes.
And I've got one more. Is there a procedure in place to reach out to members who leave the community to find out if they might have had some unresolved issues they might have been helped with?
I think historically we do a call to members who leave. And again, you know, we're a large community. We have over 300 members, and every year, you know, we have new members who come in, and every year we have members who leave. And again, a lot of the members, we look at this every year, most of the members who leave are people who've kind of tried it out, but when you look at their involvement, have never really gotten that involved. And I understand people are shopping around and like that. I mean, the fortunate thing is that when you look at the demographics, most of the people who've gotten involved with the community stay with the community. But, you know, people change. I mean, I you know, my advice to people is, you know, to people who are in charge of membership, yeah, I think we want to make a call to that person to make sure there, you know, there was a reason that could have been remediated. But again, you know, I mean, the nature of being something like this where people join is that people have reasons for joining and people may have reasons for leaving. I mean, I respect that, right? I mean, this is not a cult. You know, some places like, you know, they've returned to the world. God knows what's going to happen to them. You know, I mean, I don't see it that way. So, I mean, I don't feel, you know, when I hear somebody, you know, when I see people have left, you know, people can have all good reasons for leaving. That's, you know, I respect that. I mean, I respect, you know, people's individual freedom. But again, the reason we do make the call is not to harass people, but for that exact situation, to find that if there was something, there was some misunderstanding or something that caused them to leave. Hopefully, by having this very formal process, that people who get into that situation will now have a way of speaking up if they do feel that way, that perhaps has been informally accepted within the community, but now it's formal. So hopefully if there are people who feel something's not right in the community or something's not right, you know, they have a means of reconciliation at multiple levels, including ultimately taking it to the board. And I think that's good. Yes, we have one down here and then we'll need to stop. Do we have a microphone? just hold on a second. So because we have many people online, okay? So that's why it's for the, yeah, no, it's for the online people.
I was just going to say, of course, people move away, all kinds of things that don't have anything to do with our situation. But the other thing I was going to say was, in Buddhism, as far as I know, we don't shun people because right. They don't come. And so a lot of places do shun. You can't speak anymore to us and so on.
Right. Yeah, so that's just reinforcing what I said. Again, you know, I mean, if this was a restaurant and somebody used to come and eat here regularly and all of a sudden they don't come anymore, I mean, we do live still in a free society. Practice freedom of religion, freedom of choice. I mean, I respect that. So, yeah, I don't believe in chasing people down or, you know, grilling them or, you know. Again, I think it's good to ask the question. You know, we can always do better. You know, we can always grow from feedback. So I'm certainly open to that. But you know, and I'm a great believer in, you know, you can please some of the people some of the time, but you can't please all the people all the time. I mean, I think that's just the way it is. And so, you know, this may not be somebody's cup of tea. I may not be the teacher. You know, that's fine. Luckily, there are, you know, many other teachers pass. You know, when I look at the list or somebody hasn't renewed their membership, you know, I only, you know, wish them well and hope, you know, that they find whatever brought them here, they find that somewhere else. So we're good. So thank you all. So please, that was kind of a quick look at the Sangha Harmony Guide. And again, I think it's a very meaningful document because it can provoke reflection, self-reflection among all of us, not just for our Sangha, but for when we see our families and other relationships, our work as Sanghas. These are communities that I'm involved in, or even just dyads. You know, that's a community of two. Thank you.